I have found in 33 years of marriage that if I have to say I'm the leader, I'm probably not leading very well. Mm-hmm. It's more about actually a function than it is something you state or say.
First and foremost, it's important to realize that just because you're a Christian and just because you go to church doesn't mean you're living out a biblical marriage.
Two can only walk together if they agree to.
I think it's very important that we understand in a marriage, we're both growing individuals.
Clarity can provide speed.
So it's not about just, it's not about fair, it's not about any of that. It's about the fact that the Lord did make you the head of the house.
Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference between people who are getting married for secular reasons versus biblical reasons. And one thing I've noticed is...
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm Pastor Bill Cornelius, and this is Mason Cornelius and Cole Cornelius. And today we want to talk about marriage, what it looks like to have a healthy, godly, biblical marriage. And so let's start off with that. What is the difference between a Christian marriage and a secular marriage, Mason?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to realize that just because you're a Christian and just because you go to church doesn't mean you're living out a biblical marriage. There are Christians who unfortunately follow secular frameworks for their marriage.
Yeah.
So just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you have a faith-based marriage. So first and foremost, we have to establish that, right? So there is a difference between secular marriages, which do fall apart more often, and biblical marriages, which have a much higher chance of staying together and enduring to the end. I think a really practical tip, first and foremost, and this is something that starts when you're dating, but it lasts even when you're married, and it's this. You need to have the end in mind. You need to have the end in mind. Whenever you're dating, you have the end in mind. You're not dating by accident. You're dating on purpose.
That's great.
You're dating because you're hoping that a long-term permanent marriage comes out of this, not just a boyfriend or a girlfriend comes out of this.
Yeah.
Have the end in mind. Same thing once you're married. Have the end in mind. Hey, getting married isn't the end.
Mm-hmm.
Getting married is actually just the beginning. Okay, mm-hmm. So now we need an end goal. What's the end goal? We don't want to just have kids. We want to have kids and raise them up in the ways of the Lord. We don't want to just do that. We want to be healthy and preserve our marriage in a way that not only our kids have something to look up to, but our grandkids have something to look up to.
Mm-hmm.
Always have the end in mind. Why does this matter? It matters because clarity can provide speed. And what I mean by that is, have you ever been in the car with somebody who just doesn't really know where they're going yet? If you've ever been in the car with someone and they don't know where they're going yet, they tend to drive a little slower. They're almost driving a little slow. Do I take this turn or this turn? Sometimes they'll stop. But when you're in the car with someone who knows exactly where they're going, now I can put the pedal to the floor. Now it can go faster. So clarity provides certainty, and it also provides speed. So you're going to be able to get places faster, be more efficient whenever you have clarity in what your end goal is. So in your marriage, what's my end goal? I don't want to just get married, right? That's just the beginning. I want to live my life in a way that I have a marriage that is a great example for my kids and my kids' kids. And the more clarity we have, the more healthy our relationships can be.
That's great. That's good. I love that. You know, I think that on that note, Amos 3 talks about two can only walk together if they agree to. So I think that's where you have to have these sit downs where you talk to your spouse and say, hey, here's what I'm seeing our future look like. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Because you may find out you're completely off. And sometimes it's something that seems small is actually not small also. You know, like ask the questions like, oh, you know,
yes.
I want five kids. Oh, man, I'm not even sure if I want one. That's a big deal, you know,
or
I want all of our kids to be in private school their whole life. And I want my kids in public school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so clarity matters because it can lead to a lot of breakdowns otherwise.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. True. I mean, I think of the pastor, I saw a video one time and he was talking about before he proposed to his wife, he told her, hey, I want you to know I love you, but I love the Lord more. I'm going to spend hours a day in prayer. I'm going to go weeks fasting. I'm going to make God a priority. I'm going to be serving in the church. He let out every single, you know, extreme is what it seems like in the world. It's kind of normal within the Christian culture. But he said, hey, here's my priorities. Are you okay with that before, you know, hitching your wagon to me, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is super, super important. And I know that's not quite marriage, but that's just a practical tip in choosing who you're going to marry.
Yeah.
On top of that, I think it's very important that we understand in a marriage, we're both growing individuals. Mm-hmm. It's very important to understand that, because maybe someone becomes closer to Christ within your marriage. Let's say it's the husband, and he says, hey, I'm getting closer in my walk with Christ. I'm going to have to spend less time doing this and more time in my personal walk with Christ. Let's say it's the wife and vice versa. I have to spend less time doing this. I need more time to spend in my personal walk with mm-hmm. Christ. You never want to demonize the other person for doing that. You never want to feel like it's a withdrawal from you, because I promise it's a lot easier to be married to somebody like Jesus than to somebody who's not. And so if your spouse is beginning to draw closer towards Christ, spend more time in the church, spend more time reading the Bible, those are amazing things that you should champion rather than feel like it's pulling away from the time that you guys have together. And ultimately, it will bless your marriage like nothing else.
That's good. So here we are. We're three dudes, right? So this is a bit biased.
And I have a whopping 1 year of experience.
Yeah, you have a lot of experience. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a genius.
Right, exactly. So we're three dudes. So let's be clear about this, that obviously we're more biased on marriage as males. But I would say this, the reality is that we have an opportunity to talk to men in particular right now. This is so critical, men, that I know men and women are both listening, but men, you have an opportunity to lead out in your marriage, but it may not be what you're imagining. I think sometimes men think leading out means having this firm hand and saying, I'm the leader, I'm the, you know, the head of my home. Well, the Bible's clear about those things. There's nothing wrong with that, but I have found in 33 years of marriage that if I have to say I'm the leader, I'm probably not leading very well. Mm-hmm. It's more about actually a function than it is something you state or say. It's just, for me, it's leading out by serving first, by being the first to apologize, by being the first to take the initiative to do the right thing, to reinitiate. Like, let's say you offend each other and you don't want to talk to each other. You know, men, you should be the one that comes and says, hey, babe, I want to get this worked out. I want to sit back down with you and say, you know, here's where I messed up. Here's what I should have done differently. And I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So leading out doesn't mean like dominating. It means I'm putting your needs first and I'm leading out in that way. Yes. Should we both put each other's needs first? Yes. But man, you get to lead out in that.
Yeah.
That's what I found in a functional way in my home.
And with that God-given opportunity to lead, comes that responsibility to love, to serve, to sacrifice.
Right.
Of course, on both ends of the spectrum, there's no doubt about that. But I love what you said about it's on the man to initiate. It's on the man to be proactive and not reactive. And that is not coming from a stance of, is it fair? Do I have to apologize first because I started this? Even if you didn't start it, because you're leading, you take responsibility for the temperature of the marriage. Even if you're not at fault, you go first and you make amends because you are responsible for the spiritual temperature of the marriage. So it's not about just, it's not about fair, it's not about any of that. It's about the fact that the Lord did make you the head of the house. And with that amazing opportunity and privilege also comes the responsibility to sacrifice, to do the hard thing, to do the right thing. And so I think that's very important that we understand that as men, because a lot of times you can feel that, right? And be like, oh man, why am I having to apologize or yada, yada, yada. But the Lord is calling you to do this because that is your role. And that's just what being a man is. Leading is not always easy, but it is necessary.
I think it's important to acknowledge that, unfortunately, today we are seeing a huge surge in no-fault divorces. And overwhelmingly, whenever people are asked, why did you get the divorce? You hear the same thing. Oh, I'm not happy anymore. Or they weren't making me happy anymore. And there's a huge difference between people who are getting married for secular reasons versus biblical reasons. And one thing I've noticed is the same people who are constantly saying that, oh, they didn't make me happy, or I'm just not happy anymore. It's because they're getting married just for their own happiness. When we know marriage is actually based on holiness. And here's the beautiful thing about marrying for the purpose of holiness. When you marry for the purpose of holiness, you don't just get happiness, because happiness is actually temporary. It's a fleeting emotion. But as believers, when we are married and we focus on holiness, you get something so much better than happiness, and it's joy. You get joy unspeakable, right? You get access to a joy that makes no sense. Holiness is, it allows you to combat feelings of contempt. You are a much better individual when you are focused on a holy marriage rather than a marriage that's just supposed to make me feel happy and serve me in every way. And if she's not serving me or if he's not serving me, that is such a me-centric ideology of marriage. Oh, I only married them because they made me happy or they made me feel better. Yes, should you be happy when you're married? Absolutely. But marriage is not about them becoming your personal servant or personal happiness vending machine that you go to whenever you want a dose of happiness or dopamine spike. It is all about holiness. So the sooner we can get back to that, and there's a level of commitment that we're going for, there's a holiness that we're searching for through our marriage, the sooner you're going to see people stick together in marriage a lot more often.
And so the word holiness can be confusing. So I want to just explain that. Holiness, we think it's like religious, right? No, no, no. The word holy means set apart.
Yes.
So you're like, this relationship is set apart from all other relationships. This is a holy matrimony, right? Which means that you and I are meant to be together for life. We're doing partnership for life to honor God. And so if you don't have it that way, then like you said, people try to make themselves happy. That's based on happenstance. Which means that, you know, I mean, I can say right now, if you're basing your marriage on a happenstance, when you have two kids under the age of five in your home, good luck with that. Yeah. It's going to be crazy for a season. So if you're looking for that to sustain you, you'll be, you know, as soon as this bad times hit, you'll be out of there.
Yeah.
So there has to be like, no, we're set apart by God to do this long term. And so, and here's the other thing too, I've discovered that when there's no option out, when there's no exit strategy, then it just makes you go, well, I can either stay and be miserable, or if exiting is not possible, then if I'm going to stay regardless, then let me work to make this work. So in other words, it forces you to go, well, what's not working? Let me work on that. Let me figure that out. But if an exit strategy is always there as an option, one day you'll take it. So that's why you just have to say, this is not an option. So it's either now I'm going to stay married and be happy or stay married and be miserable. Well, I'll choose to be happy then. It's a choice you make. And so you just look at it differently and say, hey, let's fight for our marriage, not fight against your spouse. Let me fight for my spouse. Let me fight for my marriage to make this work.
It's very important to understand that, because when you get married, two have now become one. So now your decisions are filtered through, is this what's best for both of us? Because it's very easy for us as humans to think in our own best interest. That's literally how we're wired to think in our own best interest. And so, yes, we're generous. Yes, we can be kind. We can do things like that. But for the most part, our brains are wired for our own interest. And so it becomes very difficult when you have another human being that you're also considering their best interest. And so it's really important to understand that the Bible tells us two have now become one. So if maybe this is a little bit better for you, but it's not better for your wife, then it's not better for your marriage. And so you've got to really understand that every single decision that we make is a joint decision that affects both of us. And I think that will really go a long way in your marriage. And on top of that, we're talking about content is the number one indication of divorce, right? If you have content for your partner, then what you do is you look down on them, you're despiteful towards them, you almost can't stand them, essentially. And I think a lot of marriages allow themselves to get to this point by just brushing everything off. They brush it under the rug. It's better not to bring it up. It's better not to say anything. That is what causes content. And so I know this might be kind of polarizing for a lot of people, but I would actually advise you to bring it up, to talk about it, to hash it out, get it done, bring it out under the bed and say, we are killing this because this monster keeps reemerging every night, every 3 months, every 6 months. Bring it out into the light and say, we're done sleeping this under the rug, and just kill it and move on. Because eventually what happens is those things add up, they create content, and now you're in a situation where you feel like there's no other option but out, because you're keeping a mental scorecard, you're keeping a tally of what they do. You know, it tells us in the scripture that there's no record of wrongdoing when it comes to love. And so what happens when these little things add up, you start to be get, you know, content with the other person. And
contempt. That's okay. Well, let me just say,
you start to build contentment for the other person.
You do. And let me just say, you know, the best physical attribute of contempt when you see it is if your spouse or you are rolling your eyes at the other person. That's contempt. Like if you're like, here we go. That's actually contempt. And so that's just, it may seem small, but if you let that grow, eventually you'll think, oh, they're just nuts, or they're crazy, or they're this and that. They're irrational. That's the famous one I hear men say about their wives. Oh, she's just irrational. Or, oh, he's losing it. Or they're just not. You don't realize what you're saying.
He always does this. She always does this.
You're saying, I'm the centered one. I'm the one who's reasonable and rational, and you're not. Mm-hmm. What are you saying? You're saying, I'm a little bit above you.
Mm-hmm.
That's contempt.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really challenge that notion and be like, hey, I noticed how you just looked at me. I want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you didn't mean it, this is what that feels like to me. Mm-hmm. So you have to unpack that. And that may lead to even an argument, but you've got to go there.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you can't look at my opinion because it's different than yours and suddenly think I'm just losing it.
Yes. That's always fair. A tightrope to walk though as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they say to let the minors be minors and the majors be majors, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you don't have to freak out about every little thing.
Yeah, not everything. You know? But if there's a pattern going, you say, hey, I just noticed every time we talk about the kids, you kind of look at me like I don't know what I'm doing. Or I notice when we talk about money, it feels like you're financially superior to me.
Yeah.
Or it feels like when it comes to values or the church or God or whatever the case may be. And I'm not trying to say one person is not going to be better than the other. Certainly, my wife is clearly a better parent than me. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
That's okay acknowledge, right, that someone's better at something than someone else. Like Jessica will say, you know, hey, you're pretty good with investments. I'm not saying I'm brilliant, but, you know, she says that's something you're into and you research it and get into that kind of stuff. And so it doesn't mean I devalue her opinion on money.
Yeah.
I do want to know her opinion. It also doesn't mean that she devalues my opinion on parenting.
Yeah.
So you will have strengths and weaknesses, but I would just say make sure that you complement each other rather than being frustrated by the differences.
And the number one defense against contempt is celebration.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to irk and nag somebody into change.
Yeah.
So instead of irking and nagging about all the times they don't do it, celebrate when they do do it.
That's good.
Celebrate everything, even if it's the most minuscule chance that you have, celebrate it. Say, oh my gosh, when you took out the trash today, that meant so much to me. Thank you so much.
Right.
I love you. You're the best husband in the world.
Yeah.
Or, you know, babe, thank you so much for having a hot meal ready when I got home today. That means the world to me.
Right.
I know that maybe I don't notice it every day. Like if you celebrate these things, even if they're rare, then I promise you, you're going to see a huge sweep in how often that happens and how much effort they're giving to that rather than just nitpicking and saying, hey, I can't believe you do this. I can't believe you do that. And so find moments to celebrate each other, find moments to stay in a moment. You know, life passes you by in like a vapor, right? And I'm experiencing that with my daughter right now. It's so weird. Every night I look at her, I'm like, I feel like I just want to press pause because I know one day I'm going to be looking back 20 years from now and say, man, I wish that I soaked it all in, you know? And so find ways to celebrate each other, find ways to fight for the romance in your marriage. You know, I love, this is something that you're great at teaching is keeping the romance alive. Keep going on dates, keep going on vacations, keep getting the flowers just because. Don't wait for Valentine's Day or birthday or Mother's Day. Like fight for the romance in your marriage, fight for the celebration in your marriage, because that is usually one of the first things to go whenever life gets hectic, is the romance becomes stagnant. Everything else begins to increase and that begins to decrease. You know, sexual intimacy, all these things are huge and super, super important.
Yeah.
And so make sure you're fighting for those things.
I think something that has helped me recently is understanding that whoever you marry, and this is why who you marry matters, but who you marry is now the mirror that you are looking into every day. And that means my wife is my mirror and I am her mirror. And what I mean by that is every little boy, whenever he's young, runs up to the mirror and he'll like strike a pose in the mirror and he'll flex in the mirror and he'll ask himself questions like, am I strong? Am I tall? Little boys ask that question. And little girls, they run up to the mirror and they pose in their little dresses and they're dressed up like princesses. And Everly does this. She'll pose, my daughter, she'll pose and little in her little mirror in her room and she'll have her little princess dress on. But you know what's incredible? After she poses in front of the mirrors, she runs up to me and she gives me a little twirl too.
Yeah.
And what I realized is my role in my house is to be the most life-speaking, positive mirror in the whole
house. That's great.
Out of every house my wife can go to, out of out of every mirror my wife can go to, out of every mirror that my daughter can go to, my job is to be the mirror that they want to run to the most.
Yeah. That's good.
I don't want them to have to run to a distorted mirror or my daughter one day to run to a distorted mirror being a boy.
Yeah.
I want to be the mirror that is the most life-giving mirror. I want to be the mirror that is breathing and speaking life into them. So she comes up and she gives me a twirl. I want to celebrate her.
Yeah.
But here's the important thing to remember, men. The little girl in the mirror never grows up. My wife is still that little girl in the mirror. And whenever she's getting dressed up and we're going out to dinner, we're going to weddings or anything like that, when she's getting dressed up, she's not just getting dressed up for them. She's also doing a little twirl for me.
Yeah.
And you got to be a life-speaking mirror and breathe life and positivity over your wives. Because who you marry, it's not just who you're doing life with. It's the mirror you look in every single day.
Yeah. And that's the same thing for men. I mean, you're still the little boy inside. Am I strong? Am I competent? Am I admired? Am I respectable? You know, how do other people at work look at me? How do my friends perceive me? Like humans in general, we grow up. It's just our tendencies take different forms, right? We still want to be beautiful if we're a girl. We still want to be strong if we're a guy. We still want to be these things. They just take different forms. And so I love piggybacking off what you said, Mason, to just understand that in the marriage, that that doesn't change much. It's still there at the root of everything. But Jesus allows us to pursue our spouse, to honor our spouse, to love our spouse with that in mind. And by doing that in the ways that the Bible instructs us to, and by being around biblical community, being in the church, being under submission of, you know, of course, the Bible, your pastors, all those things, these people who speak life into you, when you're filled up, you're able to also fill up your spouse, right? Sometimes it's easy for you to be depleted. And you see this very commonly within the church or Christianity today, honestly, honestly, in the world today, is that when two people get married, their entire social life is now within the walls of their own home. And believe it or not, as amazing as it is to be married and as amazing as it is to have an incredible family that you love and enjoy spending time with, you're not meant for that to be the entire extent of your social life. Like the Lord calls us into community for a reason so that we can not only be sharpened by one another, but that we can serve one another, that we can love one another, that we can pursue Jesus together. So I believe it's very, very dangerous actually whenever your entire social ecosystem moves within the walls of your own home.
It's easier to get unhealthy. And because there's no, there's what I call social comparison. This is a good thing about comparison. There's a lot of bad things about comparing yourself to other people. But if you're around other godly, healthy marriages, it just makes you want to do it better. So that's where I think being a part of a local church is a big deal. Being a part of even a small group within a local church, if you can. Just being around other healthy marriages, it just, you end up emulating that. A lot of Christianity is not taught, it's caught. So you're just around the right people.
That's great. You need to say that again.
Most of Christianity is really not taught, it's caught. So in other words, like if you're around an unhealthy marriage, even if they're both Christians, you'll end up taking on those qualities.
That's great.
So in the same way, if you're around healthy marriages, you'll take on those qualities. So that's where I tell couples that, like, if you're really hurting and your marriage needs to be turned around, Christian counseling is great. But get involved in a healthy small group. Like, tell your pastor privately, hey, we could really use being around some healthy marriages. Is there a small group we could join? And they'll help you find, like, oh, I know just the one. Because when you say healthy marriage, they already know three or four people right off the top. They're like, oh, I know who I need to get them hanging out with right now. Like right now, if someone said to me, hey, I have an unhealthy marriage, I need to get in a small group, I already know who I'd send them to. But like someone came to my mind, I was like, I know right who I'd take them to. And so because I know this guy, I see how he treats his wife, I see how she treats him. And they're still, one of the ways you know someone's healthy in their marriage is they're still in awe of each other. They've been able to protect that, that like, I'm married to you. This is so awesome. Like, what a privilege. And so if you can protect that, that's such a huge thing. And the best way to do it is be around people who have protected that for years, even decades. And it teaches you how to do it too.
Absolutely.